Thank you for tuning in. We'll get to your program right after this short word from our sponsor.
In your company, a challenge? Are you battling turnover and struggling to draw key talent? Is your team not performing at the level you want? Problems present themselves through conflict, miscommunication, creative differences, unclear expectations, and motivational issues. ARC Integrated is here to address these challenges through executive coaching and customized interactive trainings. Create lasting positive change that will improve your bottom line and create a culture that attracts talent and reduces turnover by going to arcintegrated.com. That's arcintegrated.com.
How does an economy that is more mindful and less mindless become a reality? Welcome to the Mindful Marketplace. I'm your host, Joel Skeen, and I'm happy to welcome you to the show where we ask experts, entrepreneurs, investors, and industry leaders for their perspectives on how all of us can, on every level, do our part to help create a more mindful marketplace.
I am really excited to get to talk to our guest today. He is a organizer for 1 Million Cups Asheville. He was the founder of a great magazine called Capital at Play, and he is the director of Scribian, a wonderful company here located locally in the Western North Carolina region. His name's Obi Morgan, and I'm excited to get to learn from him about Capital, about our local investment economy. But first, we got to hit the balance sheet: assets, liabilities, debts, and investments. So today in the assets column, I want to talk a little bit about purpose-led companies. You know, that's been one of the key impacts of the pandemic and societal events over the last 2 years has been the rise of purpose-led companies. Purpose-driven companies obviously aren't something new, but a new article in Forbes highlighted how the type of ownership that a company has actually makes a really big difference. Compared to conventional businesses, employee-owned companies actually put out service to communities on par with their business goals. A recent study found that workers at private businesses where stock is owned by the employees rather than Wall Street investors place a higher priority on their company's commitment to corporate social responsibility. In fact, employees at worker-owned companies were twice as likely to say that their companies made an effort to provide economic opportunity for their local communities. In addition, the research suggests that purpose-led companies experience higher market share gains and on average grow three times faster than their competitors while achieving higher employee and customer satisfaction. For example, Kimberly Jones, who's the CEO of a company called Butler Till, which is an employee and women-owned company, marketing agency based up in Rochester, New York, put it this way: employee ownership is perhaps the best kept secret of our economy. It strengthens communities, fosters a financially savvy workforce, increases resiliency during recessions, and offers big benefits during economic booms. Next is liabilities. You know, one of the big liabilities in our world is big monopolies, especially big tech monopolies. And I recently learned about a little noticed but yet important big tech case in which the Ohio Attorney General David Yost is suing Google. But he's not using antitrust law. Rather, he's using common carrier law. It's asserting that Google has a public obligation under Ohio law to carry all comers on equal terms. His claim is that it's illegal for Google to downgrade rival link companies like Yelp below its own reviews of restaurants or place its own travel searches results higher than those of ones like Expedia or other travel benefits. It's this self-preferencing idea that Congress is wrestling with right now, done through common law at a state level. Recently, the Ohio Attorney General won an important procedural motion to treat that determination that Google is a common carrier. Wall Street analyst Paul Gallant made an excellent point on the politics of this case. He said that while it sounds like a long shot, recall Justice Thomas back in 2021 signaled to the lower courts that the majority digital platforms may well fit the legal definition of common carriers and thus be forbidden from unreasonable discrimination. If the Ohio Attorney General wins, we expect other states to pursue similar regimes, particularly if Congress fails to pass the no self-preferencing antitrust bill by the end of September. With the state attorney general beginning to attack this kind of self-preferencing, big tech is getting some amount of pushback here. Next is debts. A new report out showed that the U.S. national debt is steadily approaching $31 trillion, according to the data released from Friday by the Treasury Department. The federal government's total public debt outstanding has climbed to about $31 trillion, with roughly $24 trillion of that being held by the public. The national debt is the accumulation of the federal government's borrowing money by selling marketable securities to pay its deficit. A deficit occurs when the government spends more than it collects in revenues in any given fiscal year. The national debt gets larger as the U.S. racks up more deficits. And the Congressional Budget Office, or CBO, warned in its latest long-term budget outlook that the rising debt could have ramifications for the U.S. economy. According to the CBO report, debt that is high and rising as a percentage of gross domestic product would, quote, raise borrowing costs throughout the economy, reduce private investment, and slow the growth of economic output over time. With persistently rising debt, investors could lose confidence in the federal government's ability to pay off its debt, which could result in interest rates or inflation rising even more, according to the CBO. And now, while we're on the subject of debt, just a reminder that the average American household spends 34% of their gross income on interest on their debt. One of the biggest problems for most families who are trying to get out of debt is they lack the education of knowing how best to do it. There are several strategies that have existed for decades that can get you out of debt faster and more efficiently without spending any additional money. And that's why I offer free education on how you can get out of debt free at my website. So go to www.mindfulmarketplaceshow.com and click on that button that says eliminate debt to learn more. Lastly, investments. In the investment column today, I want to talk about a big company, actually, Toyota. The auto manufacturer said recently that it's going to triple its planned investment for its first U.S. battery factory right here in North Carolina due to rising consumer demand for electric vehicles. The automaker now plans to spend $3.8 billion, up from the initial $1.3 billion that they announced, and they're going to put a plant near Greensboro, North Carolina. Toyota battery manufacturing in North Carolina is expected to begin producing for hybrid and battery electric vehicles in 2025. The additional funding brings Toyota's global investment to about $5.6 billion as it aims to go carbon neutral by 2035. All right, that's the balance sheet. Now let's get into our interview here. Really excited to get to introduce to you guys. Like I said, he's a organizer at 1 Million Cups where I met him. He is the founder and former director of Capital at Play, and he owns his own business called Scribian. Please help me welcome Obi Morgan to the program. Obi, happy to have you on, my man.
Hey, Joel, thank you very much for having me. And, I appreciate your willingness to hear my thoughts on things. I don't know, I always have opinions. I just don't know that I'm really entitled to all of them. So this will be very entertaining for both of us. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, for sure. I know everything's so opinionated now. When I was growing up, people had like, I don't know, three or four opinions, I feel like. And so definitely changed. But first, tell us a little bit about kind of your background and your world in marketing and kind of how you've gotten to where you're at today.
So, let's see. I'll give the short version. Basically, I'm born and raised in Asheville, North Carolina, and started my career as an adult with a magazine called Capital at Play, which was launched as the only business publication in Western North Carolina and served as such for the last 12 or so years. I actually exited it just prior to the pandemic, which was very serendipitous, but it was founded in 2009. And I think of it typically, as an MBA of sorts. I always really enjoyed entrepreneurship and basically understanding how ideas get turned into revenue. But it's one thing to learn in a classroom setting. It's another to actually hear real life case studies. And I felt like that would make for really interesting reading and make people understand why business owners take the risk they take, why they get out of bed and go do what they do every day. And that's what we formed the magazine around. And I was the chief cook and bottle washer for a long time. And we staffed up over time and added new revenue streams. It basically, in its in my last years managing it, we had a monthly publication that was the magazine itself. We also had a weekly newsletter, and we were producing videos on local businesses in parallel to the magazine, as well as putting out an annual resource guide for business owners in the region called The Annual. So that's sort of what Capital at Play was, or is. And I, since the pandemic, I've had a couple kids. I got married just a few years before the pandemic. And let's see, I worked for a local broker dealer out of Brevard called Carolina Financial for several years before the exit. And then also started consulting after the exit and during the pandemic, doing business marketing consulting, because a lot of businesses really just need to understand how to reach customers, how to do more of what they were already trying to do, but in a new world where they can't necessarily communicate with people directly. So that requires some mechanization of your sales processes. And I'd also started Scribient with my dad a couple years, let's see, about 5 years ago now. And we started pursuing that more just in the last 6 months. But in the last 6 years, we've done about 20 projects, and we do a similar function of what we were doing with the magazine insofar as interviewing people and understanding their lives and translating that into a narrative form. But this is just a much larger format of that, right? You know, hundreds of thousands of words in some cases. And we do that on a set timetable, because that's the real thing that people have a hard time with. When you do these things yourself, it's hard to finish them. Plus, you don't really think linearly. So telling those stories and straightening them out is just a very tough thing to do for yourself. So, you know, take any of those as a jumping off point, but that's sort of the last 12 to 15 years of my life.
Yeah. Well, no, I appreciate you summing that up quickly. That's
I don't know if that was quick, but
well, it's a lot to pack in. You know, you mentioned with Capital at Play talking about kind of trying to answer that question, you know, why it is that entrepreneurs do what they do, and how those ideas get turned into revenue. And I'm curious what you found to be the commonalities there when you're thinking about that first question. Why is it that you feel like most entrepreneurs do what they do?
Well, it's, again, in my experience, and that's really just centered around Asheville, so we're talking, or Western North Carolina, so we're talking about small to medium-sized businesses. There are a few larger businesses, a few publicly traded companies, but by and large, this is, you know, we're not talking about Fortune 500s, but most people do not get out of bed every day to make money, believe it or not. And that's evident in a host of ways. You know, more recently, I think you could get a clear example over the pandemic. People are not typically making rational decisions all the time about how to pivot their business and make sure it grows or makes more money. If they were more ruthless in that regard, then maybe that would support the thought that they're there to make money. But really, they get out of bed. You have to make money to survive, right? There's a few things you have to have. In the same way, when you get out of bed every day, you really need to eat food at some point that day. If you don't, you die. But that's not really why you get out of bed. You get out of bed to do all these other things, you know, personal fulfillment, maybe, you know, you have all kinds of reasons, and they're varied, but it's typically not to make money. That's just a function of achieving their other goals.
Yeah, the money is a resource for someone to actually do the things that they want to do, right? It's not necessarily a means unto itself for most entrepreneurs, is what I hear you saying.
Yeah. I mean, as much as we like to think that that's what we're really trying to do, if you step back and look at what decisions people actually make, they generally don't support that, in my experience.
What, you know, when you think about how those ideas get turned into revenue, I guess I want to start, I want to kind of bring it a little more personal. You know, why is it then for you, when it comes to Scribian, you know, what is it for you that really gets you out of bed and really pushes you?
I would say the stories. I'm, this is like a super lofty sounding word, but autodidactic. It means you like to teach yourself things. So I love to learn all the time. If I'm not learning, I get really bored. And so to me, it's just a continued education, you know, and that's what I really love about it. The content I also really appreciate, and helping make it be a, helping the story. How would I put this? I love making a finished product that's meaningful and that's also impactful and also beautiful. And not just because that strokes my ego. It's more that it makes it more engaging for somebody else. And to me, that really goes down to whether we're doing stuff at Scrivian or in my consulting business when I'm helping someone with their marketing, right? In both cases, you have validation in sort of the content digestion. And I guess that means in marketing sense, that's what kind of data, you know, what kind of feedback and success rates are you having on your marketing efforts? Or with Scrivian, it's, you know, how much do people actually like the product? How well does it deliver on the goals of the customer? And a lot of times the goals of the customer is to explain to future generations how they got where they are. Or sometimes it's someone exiting a business and wants to leave behind a legacy so that, you know, future custodians of the business understand why the business got where it got. And so, meandering answer. I'm sorry.
No, I like it. And I want to know too, you know, if you're thinking about what gets an entrepreneur out of bed, I think it's easy to see the correlation of, man, I know so many, like we had on Bruce Waller from Grind Coffee, and you could feel the passion for what he is doing in his community through his business and through his entrepreneurship. I'm curious with, when you were editing and running Capital at Play, did you see the same thing on the side of Capital, or did you see examples of that where it wasn't, where not even just from being the entrepreneur side, but on the investor side, was, you know, did you see that same purpose-driven thing happen all the time? Did you see it happen every now and again? What was that like?
So I'd say it's across the board. And, you know, I guess if you're really investing for the purpose of making more money, right, you want to take money and turn it into more money, then you're doing a better job of doing it if you're more just focused on the numbers. But I think across the board, everybody knows that they're voting with their dollars in some context, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially,
I don't know if I have a ton of experience. Sorry, just to jump back in. Like, I don't know if I have enough experience to, you know, I don't know if I have enough data to say that is significant in any way, but.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's about, I was reading a book by Michael Schumann who talks about local and values-based investing. And about how it's about getting a not just a financial return, but also a social return, you know. And so obviously a lot of that would have to be local as a starting place, but it could also venture outside of that. So I don't know. Do you have any additional thoughts on that in general?
No, not necessarily, because, you know, this is your show. I'll let you take it wherever you want to go. I could keep talking about any of this stuff for a long time.
Yeah. So, that's what I would like to talk. I'd like to get your perspective on a little bit more is how do you see when you think about that purpose that people are getting out of bed for in the morning as an entrepreneur or as an investor? Do you see overlap between those two things, or do they seem kind of different to you?
But do I think that people are doing one or the other? In other words,
do you see that same desire of, you know, what gets people out of bed in the morning as an entrepreneur? Do you see that same purpose behind the capital side of things, as well as on the entrepreneurship side of things? Or do you think that there could be some changes, or, you know, what you think the way it should be compared to how it is now?
Well, I think there's always some things that need to be changed in any structure over time, just as things iterate and things grow. But again, I most investors generally seem to care. I don't know if it should be the overriding purpose. I don't know. It's tough to say. I think it's very contextual. I'm sorry. I'm trying to think of the right way to really say it. I mean, if you're investing well, you should not probably focus too much on the actual business. No, that's not correct at all. I can't even say that out loud. So I got some insight into how you might think about some of these things when I was working with this broker dealer, because we would break down the offering materials in a website presentation, because it's just too many pages to describe all the things that you have to disclose in a private offering, private investment offering, to just have one like really long page, right? Like one long web page that's just, you know, like 100 pages of a document long. You break them down, and so there's a bunch of different things that become important and material just to being a savvy investor. And it's not just about the finances, right? Because those are all things that relate to risk. So, you know, understanding who the person is and what their background is and why they might have some reasonable expectation of managing a company like this is a factor. There's market factors. There's what customers might think. So I would say, I don't think it's possible to be a good investor if you don't understand some of those things and don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But I also would say, on the other side, I think you and I talked about this. You know, I'm not a particular fan of the B corporation status, or sort of special groups in that regard, because it implies that everybody else that's out there just running a C corp or an LLC doesn't care. And I don't find that to be the case. So, you know, I just think it shouldn't be a thing that has to be begged. Like, you have to prove that you care about the community or the world or things like that. I think most people do.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, my own company, you know, is not a B corp. It's an S corp, and I don't think that detracts at all from someone, you know, having purpose behind what they do in their day to day and offering something truly of value to the marketplace that exists. I would also like to know, you know, what do you, when you see sort of the entrepreneurship community here in Western North Carolina, and you see the way things have been over the last couple of years, is there anything you're excited about? What is exciting to you right now?
I think most exciting thing, and this isn't specific to Asheville, but I mean, North Carolina is becoming recognized as one of the most welcoming places to be a business in the country. And I also think I couldn't have possibly known what was coming, but in 2019, I think it was, I gave a presentation at the Leadership Asheville, and basically said that telecommuting would save Western North Carolina, because it's a way for us to, people usually sacrifice pay to come to Western North Carolina because of all of the quality of life that they can have here. But now that really telecommuting has gained so much traction through the pandemic, you can live here and work everywhere. And I think that does a lot for the economy and does a lot for Western North Carolina.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think we've been seeing that growth. It's pretty obvious and pretty difficult to deny here. If people want to find more out about you, about the work you're doing with Scribian, about how you're helping people tell their stories, you know, where can people connect with you?
Thanks. Yeah, you can connect with me on LinkedIn. You can connect with me really just via Scribian's website, and that's scribian.com. You can reach out to me. You can find me at 1 Million Cups on a Wednesday morning in downtown Asheville. Or those are probably the best ways I could think of.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time here, Obi. Really appreciated having you on the show, and really excited to get to develop more of a relationship with you as we move along here in the future. If you want to listen to this episode or other episodes of the Mindful Marketplace, as well as there's a ton of other great hosts here on bizradio.us, go to bizradio.us and click on the show's link. You can also connect with me directly at mindfulmarketplaceshow.com. All right. Thanks, Obi, for being on the show, and look forward to seeing you again here in the near future.
Thanks, Joel. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. If you liked what you just heard, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and be sure to visit bizradio.us to find hundreds of other engaging conversations, local events, and more.